And welcome to Insight Out. It's March 17th, 2015, and St. Patrick's Day to you. This is Insight Out, the naked truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth, well, the truth, she's always naked.
Ah, and that's Errol's try to O Patrick, because it's St. Patrick's Day, and I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider.
St. Patrick.
St. Patrick, and we're welcoming you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, several spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as you would like.
And our show tonight is brought to you by our sponsor, Go Raw. 100% raw food that it's not full of the blarney like a lot of those foods that say they are real food. This is the real raw food in its most pure and edible state. And it tastes good. It is good for you. And it's always good to have things that are good for you. Don't you think, Rochelle?
I do. And I hope you realize that we're not going to do the whole show like this because I lose my mind. But Go Raw can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. So go to goraw.com to find out where Go Raw can be found in your neighborhood.
In Chernobogora. I don't know what Chernobogora means, but it's like they say that when they're trying to imitate this Irish accent like I'd be doing. But, you know, when I met Rochelle, and you don't know this, she was an Irish nun. I have a picture of her in her habit. And that was long before I made a habit of her. But we were so happy to get her out of that habit.
Oh, God.
And I was looking at pictures of her today in her habit and also without her habit. And she was a fine-looking wench.
Oh, well, thank you there. Now I'm an old wench.
Yeah. Still fine-looking, but...
Older.
Older. With more character.
Now, if you want to speak to us tonight, you can call us at 888-627 6008, and I'm finished.
Rochelle says those numbers like she has this peculiar look on her face. It's like, what is it? What's the subtext of when you say those numbers? I can feel it, but I don't know what
it
is.
I'm hoping that you'll hear it.
Is that it? Well, if you forget the number, just call in and we'll give it to you.
Errol introduced tonight's show on the internet as a lift, or getting a lift, having a lift. What was it? Do you remember?
Need a lift.
And it was really fun because I looked at it and I thought, what gives me a lift? You know, think of all the things that gives you a lift, you know, like in your course of your day, you're going along, you're trudging, and then all of a sudden something happens or you make a connection and you've been given a lift. So I started enumerating all the things in the day that gives me a lift. And the first thing that came to mind was my son attending to his child with so much presence and love. I got a real lift out of that one.
Yes.
That was a big lift.
I'll bet you did.
I did. And so sleeping gives me a lift, even though it doesn't seem like it. But falling asleep into that wonderful place, that gives me a lift. Chocolate gives me a lift. Standing still and listening to trees talk gives me a lift.
Yeah, but what did they say there, darling?
I don't know. I don't speak tree talk, but they're talking and I'm listening. I figure one of these days I may learn what they're saying. Having philosophical conversations like we do with other human beings. Attempting to understand the why behind just about everything.
The why behind everything, huh?
Listening to my higher mind. Being present, engaged in and with what and whomever, dancing, listening to beautiful music, witnessing brilliant performances by actors, athletes, dancers, singers, performers of all kind, viewing beauty of any kind, beauty. And
what else?
Well, what gave me a lift this morning was watching a turkey and a deer staring at each other about 4-5 feet from each other and just staring. And then the turkey started to move and the deer turned around and bounded, literally bounded away. That gave me a lift. I started off my day in beautiful Lupin Lodge with also.
The deer was bounding and you were lifting.
That's right. The deer was bounding and I was lifting, and the turkey was gobbling.
And they do make a loud gobble, don't they?
Oh, God. And that was a turkey that spread his tail. It was so huge.
As I recall, last night you were actually running from that turkey in fear because you thought the turkey was going to come after you and do what?
Peck at me. Peck at turkeys do that.
Well, they
do. I heard today a cat walked into the gaggle. Are turkeys gaggles or just geese gaggles?
You know, that's a good question. Callers, are turkeys gaggles or just geese gaggle? And when is the last time you gaggled? That's really the question, because we recommend that everyone gaggle at least once a week. And we recently had a contest of people who wanted to say or define what is gaggle. And we had Thelma Wimpelstein from Omaha, Nebraska, and she said, well, I think a gaggle is when, you know, the hens get together and they all go shopping. Thank you, Thelma. That's great. A gaggle of hens going shopping.
Rochelle rolling her eyes at Errol's terrible joke is a gaggle.
Well, it's not
it's
really
like a gaggle, like you're gagging.
Wait a minute. If you don't think of it as a joke, but if you think of it as a departure from expectation.
Oh, my God. You certainly can justify things, can't you?
Wait a minute. Do I detect a hint of judgment in that?
No, that wasn't a hint. I was very
right out there.
Very,
okay.
Very
all
right.
Right, all right.
With that one.
Right. No hint on that one. Yeah.
So yeah, but anyway, so this person was telling me that a cat that lived in her vicinity of her where she lived was a very strong, you know, cat, decided to walk in the middle of this group of turkeys, and these turkeys just pecked at its head. They all pecked at it, and the cat just didn't care at all, just kept walking. And then later she touched the cat's head, and it had welts all over its head. So you see, turkeys can peck at you.
Well, you should be cool like the cat then, just kind of keep walking.
No, I didn't want to get pecked.
No pecking of Rochelle.
By gaggles of turkeys.
Yeah. Hen pecking. That's a phrase that's become like an idiom. Hen pecking. And it's like she's going, well, do this and get out there. And why did you do that? And, you know, I told you not to do that. And how many times do I have to tell you that? And you should have been over there, not over there. And why didn't you make that thing when I told you not to make that thing? And would you get up and take care of that thing over there, please? Because it's really annoying. You're sitting there being a lazy, no good guy. Can't you look at the grass and see that the grass needs cut? Yeah, not done that. And who's going to take the kids to the mall this afternoon, huh? It's me always leaving it up to me, et cetera.
That's what is being henpecked, when a man is henpecked.
Well, that was my...
So it's definitely a woman pecking at a man.
Well, that would be a rooster pecked if it were a man. And ladies, let me ask you, have you ever been rooster pecked?
Oh, my God. I'm starting to blush. This is getting very off.
Rochelle's radio blush is different than her live blush.
That's right.
Because you can't
see it.
You know, in deference to this day, and I'm going to start talking about what gives me a lift. And certainly one thing that gives me a lift is music. And since this is Patrick's Day, this kind of music really gives me a lift. And speaking of a gaggle, that song was called, the first one in this Irish jig medley was called Geese in the Bog.
Geese in the Bog, I love it.
They heard us, they knew we were talking about them, and they wanted to insist that a gaggle was a bunch of them together.
What kind of medley was this?
Irish jig medley.
The second song,
you know, as they tend to go from one to another, The Wind That Shakes.
The Wind That Shakes, oh.
So we've had quite a time here at what we like to think of as Camp Paradise amongst our motley crew. And we are like so diversified, the people that live here and work here and the people that come here. Just as a reminder, this is a clothing optional resort that's been here. It will be celebrating its 80th year birthday this year. And let me tell you this, it is fascinating. We have more plots and stories and subplots and characters, and we don't have to watch TV anymore, and we don't, because we are now it. We have jumped into the soap opera. We have an amazing cast of characters, each of which brings their own unique human specimen aspect with them.
Yes, and all realizing every day I love more and more people that I interact with, each bringing their own story and, as Errol said, their unique personality to the plate. It's a very fascinating to live in a community like this.
One thing I notice is how often people get vexed and frustrated and annoyed. And I think it's a very common human trait to get frustrated and annoyed and angry and upset when things... Well, what were some of the reasons? Well, I think when we think things are stupid or unfair. Well, I'm just going.
I think it's always we get annoyed when it's not what we want it to be, no matter what it is. It's just not what we want it to be. We want it to be different, and we want somebody else to be different, and that's why we get annoyed. So all those other things you said are like sub.
Yeah,
divisions of the same thing.
Yeah, they're the sub, but they're the recognizable divisions. I think that's where we play out the story. The story, which is what interests us, we love stories, is played out in those specific, more superficial aspects of it. Well, I told her she was supposed to be here in the morning at 10 o'clock and take care of the tin cans or whatever the story is, because that's what human life is made up of, even though our process is to recognize that it is just that. It's just a story.
Yeah, but I don't think it, at some point, I don't think in our development there's a point where we, it's almost like you detach from the story. And you, it's the only way you can know it's a story. When you're in it, it feels like it's not a story. It's your thing. It's your stuff. But when you can step back, and I think this is what all those gurus of India speak of all the time as detachment.
And don't forget the Irish gurus. They don't talk about them as much as they used to. But there are just as many Irish gurus as there were.
Actually, there is many gurus in every culture, I'm sure. Since guru means teacher, I would say there's just about as many teachers in every culture as there are cultures. Hello to that.
I think you're right.
But what I'm saying is that the state of detachment is something that I think comes with a level of maturity. I just don't think you can have it when you're really little, when you're young,
right,
or what I would call immature, you know, but in not saying it in a pejorative way. I'm just saying it that we're immature, you know, we're just young. We haven't done anything wrong. It's just where we are on the scale of evolution. And as you progress, as we progress on that scale, we become more aware and we can step back a little bit further or a little bit above situations and interactions and see the stories and see them as stories. And just the way I love going to a movie, I can get totally involved in it. I can cry, I can get scared and everything else, but I'm always aware that it's a movie.
I was reading about this very thing in the book Love Without End, where Yeshua, formerly known as Jesus,
formally known as Jesus,
in the true sense of being formal, because his name when they called him was Yeshua or Yeshua. I'm not sure which way it's pronounced, but it was the word Joshua, and so it was like, "Hey, Yeshua, give us some truth," and he would respond with various versions of what reality can look like if you know you're at one with the whole of it. And all of the lessons, I believe, that he gave us, along with the other gurus, Indian and Irish, who knew their way about life in the universe.
And Russian and Polish.
And those guys, too. And don't forget Native American and Native everybody.
Right.
Let's just make a carte blanche, because at one point, everybody was a Native.
Of something.
Of something and somewhere. And the rest are descendants. So what's the big... Anyway, that to come from what I like to call it, the third perspective. There's the perspective of you, there's the perspective of my perspective, and then there's the perspective of the union. And that to me is some major revelation and an unbelievable opportunity. And I do believe Yeshua, by being able to integrate the human and the source or the divine in a living being, was facilitating that union. And as a result of that, he was able to liberate essentially the spirit of unity. It's called the Holy Spirit or the Spirit of Truth. But I believe in essence it's the spirit of unity which was liberated onto this planet through this little opening in reality that was carved out by the life we know as Yeshua ben Yosef.
Well, I experienced that a lot lately, and I think it has to do with the thing that allows me to do that is not resisting that which is coming at me. As I as someone comes at me, their essence, their words, their deeds, and I don't resist it, but I embrace it, that happens.
How does that?
Well, because I come into union with that person, and therefore that third thing, it takes place. But I can't come into union if I'm in resistance. It's impossible, because resistance is pushing away. And so the embrace allows that to take place. And I guess there's many steps before you can get to that union, because you have to deal with the fear of union. You know, so often we think, well, if I enter into an embrace with this person, I will cease to be. I won't be here anymore.
Yeah, but that's at the deepest level. That's because most people, most of us, people, feel these emotions at a very surface level, and we take it very seriously at that level. So what I'm hearing you do is essentially deconstruct it to bring it down to its essence. And
I'm
it
a
is,
deconstructionist.
Yes.
Well, I finally discovered who I was.
Yes. We've all been waiting.
I am a deconstructionist, and on St. Patty's Day, 2015, I discovered that.
Today we're deconstructing the various travails and upsetness that happens amongst human beings, and how at the core, it's all fear, ain't it?
Yes, it is. It's fear of loss, which is the ultimate fear. That we're going to disappear, which we are, of course. That's what death seems like to most of us.
Right.
All of us, actually.
Even
if we believe there's something more, this person that I know, the way I know it right now, is not going to be there. I may be something else. I may come back as a moth. It doesn't matter. But the thing is that this person that I've become so familiar with, or not familiar with, but at least I recognize, and there's a certain comfort in the recognition, won't be there anymore.
Well, what convinces me we don't ever come back ever again is because I believe in a loving, supportive, life-giving, affirming, ongoing presence. And I wouldn't believe that that presence, if it really cared, would have us be a teenager over and over again.
That's true.
That would be too cruel.
That's horrible.
Not to mention, we're watching our little granddaughter in her third week of life. And, you know, I look at it and I go, you know, I'm glad I'm not there anymore.
Three weeks old?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because it's impossible to know. You know she's not cognitive at this point.
I don't think so. It's just like a thing.
You know, she's there that you can almost feel her, but not quite. And I think I was so wrapped up in my children because I was with them every single second, of course. And as you were, you know, feeding them, cleaning them, putting, you know, there was such a continuous interaction with them. As grandparents, we see her once, maybe twice a week, you know, and there's a distance between that. And so it's such a different perspective. It's such a different perspective.
Being a grandparent.
Yeah, than being a parent.
Well, you have objectivity, and you're not the one who is where the buck stops and where the poop stops, actually. If you watch them enough, and if they're doing a good job and you're doing a good job, there's going to be some poop.
And I really think that the love of parent, you know, takes place every second. Every second there's another love added to the pot. Every second, because every second you are so needed in this person's life.
Well, and here's the universe trick. According to the Urantia book, the more you bestow love on something or someone, mm-hmm. the more you love them.
Well, maybe that's it.
And so here you are kind of forced mm-hmm. to bestow love by, you know, life asserting itself and you taking on the responsibility, partially through genetic instinct and social whatever.
And the miracle that, you know, that you are part and parcel of creating this thing, this child, that this child, you know, came out of a union that you had with your wife, your husband, your lover, your spouse, your mate, your whatever we want to call all those people.
Often it's that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there are people creating babies, you know, in test tubes. But
well, not only that, there's babies who have come about as a result of rape, and so there's all kinds of scenarios for how we enter this life. But when we show up, we pretty much need to be fed, changed, cuddled, rocked, swayed, and swung. And to celebrate that, we're going to sing us a Gaelic song here.
Okay.
Gods me bain the kefala lo rovio on the so horovio vi horova o ho sound like I'm servant jealous fala lo rovio on the so horovio vi horova o ho kunjer pat the flying mill shaft fala lo rovio on a so horovio, vi horova o gor. Mach vuru ich vi gilein, falalo, rovio. On a so horovio, vi horova o gor.
What they're singing there in Irish is, when the little babe comes into the world and brings with it its little parcel of innocence and almost complete and utter unknowing, and then says, fill me up, Fill me up, Cuddy, fill me up. And sure enough, the life comes along and takes this little creature and begins to show him possibility. There's a manifestation of so many possibilities that it's just streaming for the baby's eyes and through his ears and the sounds that he hears. It's a universe of infinite potentiality. And that's why we love it. And that's why we're here to stay in the universe and go on and sing. I think this next lyric is about you, Rochelle. Let's see. I think they were saying something about you being all dressed up in green. And that was Old Blind Dogs.
Old Blind Dogs?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
We saw them live here in San Francisco many years ago. And we are here in the Northern California area, for which we're very grateful. We're broadcasting our show, Insight Out, The Naked Truth Live, to you. And do you need a lift? Because part of what we're about in this program is, as Rochelle being the deconstructionist that she is, is trying to cut to the essence of things so we don't waste a lot of effort monkeying about in the illusion and the stories.
I was talking to someone the other day, and I was reminded once again how, as human beings, we need to be seen, we need to be heard, and we need to be appreciated. And that does give us a lift. When we know someone's really hearing us, not trying to change us, but just listening to us and seeing us where we are in the moment and appreciating the fact that we are there and is not wanting to make us go somewhere else or anything else. And when that happens, it gives us a lift, really gives us a lift, a hi-ho lift.
A hi-ho lift, yes, a lift.
And it brings a joy to our being, a smile to our face, a lilt to our voice, and a twinkle to our eyes.
Right. There be the twinkle. Sorry you can't see it out there.
I'm having really a fun time speaking with a brogue.
Speaking of a brogue, I was thinking it's recognition. That's the word I'm looking for. To be recognized, to recognize. It's like everything in life wants to be recognized for what it is and responded to accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And if I superimpose my perceptions based upon my conditioning, my past, my expectations, my beliefs, my knowledge, lack of knowledge, etc., which formulates my whole projection of reality, what I throw all over you, and it stinks, and then you have to try and get it off you, and before you know it, you get mad, and that's what starts all the arguments, is when people throw their perceptions all over them.
Yes, and perceptions, there's some perceptions aren't as stinky as other perceptions. But the ones that are really foul. Foul perceptions. Foul don't want foul perceptions thrown at us. But once in a while, a perception that touches the reality of my own being is an aha moment.
Now, do you think a perception comes before or after thought? I know it's one way or the other.
Yeah, for me, I perceive and then I think about what I perceived. Other people may think first and then perceive to check it out.
Well, that's interesting. I guess it's how we define perception, isn't it? Perception is, well, it's normally what you perceive, isn't it? Yes. Yes, I think I have.
It's called the roundabout dictionary.
I think I have it. I remember looking up the word reciprocity. And then it's a mutuality. And I looked up the word mutuality, and it said reciprocity. And, you know, I realized those two words were playing the reciprocity mutuality game. They were being reciprocal back and forth. It was so subtle. Webster and random, you guys, You were very clever. Wrote those dictionaries.
It was a moment. You had to be there. I think that's funny, actually. I do. I don't know. Like sometimes, like someone comes into your field, and you perceive something, and it does seem to be beyond or under or around thought. It's not. You don't think it. You're not thinking something that from the past. It's sort of fresh in that moment. It's a perception. You just kind of. I'm using my hands now, radio audience, watch.
Yeah. Her hands are moving in a counterclockwise reverse direction, north by east, in degree deviates of about 1 to 6 degrees, with a slight wind of about 5 miles per hour.
Yes, exactly.
Affecting it.
I don't know. You know, I guess it. I don't really know.
Well,
somebody will come into my office where I'm working. And immediately there's some kind of thing happens.
Well, like that event that happened to me when I was in college and the way I met Jane, this wonderful young woman that I dated. We ended up being very close. Anyway, and the way I met her, though, I was walking with a friend. It was like springtime, April, May in Missouri, and it was this fresh spring feeling, and people were not wearing as much heavy clothing. And a friend had a date, and I accompanied him to the women's dormitory and residence hall, I think they call them. And he was waiting for his date. I'm standing in the lobby, and this girl, cute, petite girl, comes down the stairs from her room, I guess, and to the lobby, and I instantly knew that she was, by the way she looked at me, that she thought I was her blind date. And the way she smiled, I could tell instantly that she liked what she saw. She was happy to see me. And I knew that instantly. And so I went up to her and I said, "Well, you ready?" She said, "Yeah." And I started escorting her outside. And then this guy came up the steps, and I knew that was the blind date. How did I know that? And I said to them, "This is your blind date," and introduced them and left. Now, from their point of view, she might have seen, you know, me as, oh, she was so happy it was me and not this other guy that she was afraid she was going to have to see. She was just overjoyed. And I'll take this guy. I don't care. And she walked out, and the guy she was introduced to, she didn't know him. And from Adam, she never had a blind date expectation. Maybe it's just my story.
Well, it is your story, but there may be more to it than that because you have had a perception. You know, that was a perception. Was not a perception?
Well, I would think it's a perception.
You know, and so sometimes a perception is preceded by a knowledge, by knowing.
Well, there's that kind of knowing that if you're open to it, that does seem to come at us beyond just the slow, methodical way the mind works.
Right.
And not only that, the mind is so enhanced by and encumbered by language. I mean, think about it. The way most of us talk, every sentence has got to have a subject and a predicate. Every sentence. You know, well, you know.
No, some of my sentences don't.
I noticed
I've been accused of that.
And one of the things
that's
we do.
That's not a sentence, Rochelle.
Right. Not only that, if we interrupt you, then it's our way of helping to separate out the subject from the predicate. So they have a chance to get to know themselves independently
of each other. Our predicate's predictable.
I'm not going to touch that. I really am not going to touch that.
I just found that funny.
But you know, when you say these things, Rochelle, and she's laughing, her eyes are so smiling, and I love it. And you should come and visit us, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But in the meantime, if you're in Ireland.
Oh.
There's a tear in your eye, and I'm wondering why, for it never should be there at all. With such power in your smile, sure a stone you'd beguile, so there's never a teardrop should fall. When your sweet lilting laughter's like some fairy song, and your eyes twinkle bright as can be, you should laugh all the while, and all other times while, and now smile a smile for me. When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they steal your heart away. For your smile is a part of the love in your heart, and it makes even sunshine more bright. Like the linnet's sweet song, crooning all the day long, comes your laughter, so tender and light. For the springtime of life is the sweetest of all, there is never a real care or regret. And while springtime is ours, throughout all of youth's hours, let us smile each chance we get. When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they'll steal your heart away.
Do you know that when I was in elementary school, I learned that song for St. Patrick's Day? That was one of the songs we learned. Irish Eyes Are Smiling.
That was John McDermott.
John McDermott, When Irish Eyes Are Smiling.
But I have to say about Irish songs, and I've always known this, but a lot of them are about drinking. I mean, let's face it. There's
Irish Eyes Are Smiling, aren't
No, that isn't, you know, that isn't one about drinking, but a lot of them are. And it's just so interesting that the activity of taking in alcohol and the effects that it has on a person is so conducive a soil to generate songs about that phenomenon itself.
One way to put it. I think people work hard, you know, and they and when they leave their work or their whatever they do, you know, sometimes very difficult, hard physical work, and they have a pint, you know, it sort of like takes all the muscles and relaxes them and makes them feel lighthearted. And I think that's what alcohol does. And then, of course, like everything else, you can go a little overboard. And when you get overboard, then you can either get sloppy happy or sloppy mean. It seems to bring out the best or the worst in us.
It's true there, isn't it? It can bring it out either way. It depends on what
you...
Now, that is an interesting question. I never thought to ask about this. For example, there are sweet drunks and affable drunks, and there are mean drunks.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't really know, even though we worked sort of in the alcohol recovery business for many years, I don't really know what determines the manifestation. I can't believe I didn't think about it till just now.
Well, I don't know, because a guess of some proportion would be that if you have a lot of anger in you and you repress it, then you have a chance to express it. You get drunk and you don't have to take any responsibility for it. I was drunk. I didn't know what I was doing.
Well, I remember a line in a movie or somewhere I heard this that has always kind of challenged me. And someone was drunk in the movie and got angry or whatever, acted out. And one of the other character's comment was, "Well, that's the real John." Mm-hmm. And the other character, or I don't remember where I read this, the other character said, "No, that's just John drunk."
Ah, interesting.
And so to what extent is a person who they are when drinking, especially when you think about how much drinking goes on in our society, especially like amongst like college age kids, binge drinking is a huge thing.
Yeah, and it's kind of destructive too, because too much alcohol can really damage your liver.
It can be very destructive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes people need permission to act out, and alcohol or drugs give them permission to act out. And then they don't have to take responsibility for it. They can say, "Oh, I was drunk," or "I was stoned." And that's that.
Right.
But if we have permission, maybe if we have permission to act out without it being so horrible, we might not need alcohol or drugs. You know, and I don't know.
I also,
it's a guess.
If I were in that period of my life and I were like horny a lot and didn't have an outlet for it, drinking might be the next best thing. I mean, that could be an issue. I mean, think about, you're that age, you're like, you're a dog, you know, you're men talking about.
Oh, good. I didn't understand it at all. That's what must be why. Oh, Rochelle, you're bad.
Very bad. Very bad, indeed. So we're talking about what gives you a lift, and if you're out there needing a lift, start with gratitude. It's like gratitude is always appropriate. That's something I've learned. No matter what, gratitude is always appropriate. So whatever befalls you, or whatever's the opposite of fall or lifts you, whatever befalls you and whatever lifts you up, to say thank you, because somewhere in it is value for
you. I just
had
this realization that it may befall you, but when you say thank you, it lifts you up.
Wow. That is great. Did you all hear that? Guru herself has spoken. Say it again.
It may befall you, but when you say thank you to it, it lifts you up.
You know, that's worth taking some time out and listening to another Irish tune.
Set sail from the sweet cold front. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. With a wonderful craft she would rig for it up. I know how the wind went over. She stood several blasts, did 27 masts, then they called her the Irish Rover. We had 1 million bags of the best Sligo rags. We had 2 million barrels of stone. We had 3 million sides of our blind horses' hides, but 2 million barrels of bones. There were 5 million dogs, 6 million hogs, and 7 million barrels of powder. There were 9 million nails, bound many ghost tails, on board of the Irish Rover. There was Ellen Vicky Coote, who played hard the bully flute, when the ladies lined up for a set. He would fiddle with skill, for each sparkling quadrille, and a dancer from Fluter had bet. Smart when he talked, he would cock off the wall, and he rolled a dame under and over. They all knew what was a man's thought, but he took up his stance, and he sailed in the Irish Rover.
Mm-hmm. And that was the Dubliners singing the Irish Rover song.
The Irish what song?
Irish Rover.
Irish Rover song. It sounds like a drinking song.
It did. It was from the drinking song song selection book. And if they have that book, actually, it's Irish drinking song, and they have, you know, like you have certain foods, they recommend certain wines. Well, when you have these listing of these things, they have, for each song, they have a recommended kind of whiskey and way to drink the whiskey.
You made that up. Didn't you make that up? You did. You made it up.
I love this moment. Did he make it up? What do you think out there, audience? Did he make it up, or is there such a thing? We'll leave it up to you to find out for yourself.
No, this curiosity of 1992.
And let us know, and you can call us right now if you know the answer, or even better, if you know the question. What's the number?
888-627-6008.
Okay. There you have it. So where we are tonight is we're being lifted. Now, I can speak from the experience of someone who is depressed a lot, okay? I know what depression is like. So when you say the word being lifted to someone like myself who has bouts of depression, it's a serious challenge. What does it take to be lifted when one is otherwise down with the blues? And progressively, and this is the value, I guess, of just life experience and aging, the more detached I get from any expectation of how something is supposed to show up or come about or step in my face and be a certain way, the less I rub up against life. And so life is less abrasive, which leads me to the conclusion that a lot of it has been abrasive because I've rubbed up against it violently, maybe not intensely violently, but with real resistance, which goes back to what you were saying about resistance, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Yes, it does. I find that every day I'm more and more clear about the power of non-resistance. It's such a powerful awareness. It's such a powerful tool. And people seem to think if you don't resist something, you just kind of lay there, let everybody walk all over you. But to me, when I don't resist what's coming at me, I am able to know how to act appropriately in that moment. Because sometimes what's coming at you really needs to be zonked on the head. You know? And it's appropriate. It's the most appropriate thing in the world at that moment, or you'll be eaten alive.
Okay, now here's an interesting example of that story. According to the Urantia book, there's a moment where he's walking through like the bazaar and this bully is picking on this kid, and he goes up and he pulls the bully off of the kid, and he held him at arm's length as the kid was swinging around, which allowed the other boy to leave. To me, that's a very interesting story from the point of view of non-resistance, because here's the apostle of non-resistance, Yeshua, and yet in this instance, he did step in. Now, one of his buddies asked him why he didn't punish the guy, and I don't remember his exact response. You can find it in the Urantia book. It's in there. It's not very long. You'll be able to find it.
How many pages is it?
2,097 pages.
Right, somewhere in there. Start at the beginning.
Anyway, it's in there, and we're here working to unravel the conundrum, which is this whole convoluted way we approaching life in our immaturity and kind of early stage of evolution, which seems to be where we are.
It definitely seems to be where we are, because I really see a maturity is becoming more and more inclusive. You include more and more experience, more and more relationship in your life, and you can only do that as you open up more and more. Because if you're closed, you can only let so much in, but if you're open, you can let more in. And you can't be open if you're in resistance, because the very act of resistance is to close down and push against.
So here's where the trust comes in, because I noticed this in myself and others, that it shows up as the need to be in control. That's one way the non-resistance shows up, the opposite of receptivity, because if I'm receptive, then anything could happen, and I probably have had an experience in growing up, probably many times, where being open, naturally open and vulnerable, as one would be, was met by discomfort. So many of us, in other words, some level of abuse. And as a result of that, we close down and we develop habits not only to stay non-receptive, but to justify our non-receptivity to ourselves.
It's very safe. Being resistant feels safe.
Well, it feels like you're in control.
Right.
Of keeping it safe. You may or may not have control, right. But you feel like you can do something.
Right.
And therefore, you're in control. Whereas to receive, it's like yield. You know, Yeshua on the cross, I mean, that's the ultimate. You know, I don't believe he died for our sins, but I do see that gesture of utterly receiving, arms spread wide, receiving. So for me, he was an amazing demonstration of the power of that experience. And I also get the message from him is that you don't have to do this. You don't have to go strap yourself on a cross of suffering in your life and allow life to crucify you. You can break free of that. And I've shown you how to do it. And the way I've done it is through this path that I call faith, and others call it faith too, which is the assertion.
Does everybody call it faith?
I met a guy in Chicago who did not call it faith.
Do you remember that discussion we had with, was it?
Ram Dass.
Ram Dass and that rabbi, Michael Lerner. We were talking about faith. I think what happens with language is that we have a concept that this word means this thing. And if you use it out of context, and you try to create its definition out of context, it doesn't work. Does that sound very abstract?
I don't know. Maybe it's time for a commercial.
What I'm saying is that when you use the word faith, it's such a loaded word.
Well,
you know, biblically loaded. It's religiously loaded. And to use the word faith, it's almost like find another word that says the same thing.
Okay. I got another word.
Okay.
Confidence.
Confidence.
It's not the full story that I think is the word faith, but it's certainly a major component. You have a confidence in
the unknown.
Yes, in the potential, or confidence in what's going to emerge. It will be okay, and you'll be able to deal with it. So I think one is able to have that by starting to practice it. That's where the will comes in. That's why they sometimes talk about faith as if, act as if life is on your side, as a simple way of putting it.
Well, it's interesting. More and more at this point in my life, when I'm in a situation that seems like I have no...
What?
I can't think my way out of it. Like it's beyond what I understand. And in that situation, I go into what I call prayer. But it's more like just getting really centered and opening myself up to the possibilities that I don't understand. And really asking for and expecting that the best will happen. And then it does. It always does.
And that's why your eyes are smiling in your Irish sort of way, Rochelle. Hebrew influenced, it may be. And we have to complete our time together. I think it's been grand. It's been St. Patrick's Day. We've enjoyed our St. Patrick's Day sort of invitations.
So can I say it's what I always say with an Irish
Wait a minute. Let's just remind them. We'd love to hear from E. Strider. Just email me or go to our website, thelaughingheart.org. And I have a blog, and it's like full of my...
Bloggy stuff.
Bloggy. Me being really bloggy. Yeah. Because I want to be the first guy on the blog.
The blog. He's the first guy on the block.
So with that, we'll start heading out and back here next Tuesday night Pacific time.
And remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. The top of the evening to you all.
And hurt more. You don't want to be hurt more.
Oh, did I say that?
No, you were good.